Good morning, everyone. Great to be here with you. Thanks, Jesse and Jenna, for... I love how light and love go together in your music. That was beautiful. Thank you. And Beth, wherever you went, thank you. Oh, there you are, way back there. Wow. She kind of said everything I want to say, which is awesome. And I also want to thank all of you who have, you know, been wishing for a white Christmas. You made my drive-in really interesting today. I live south of Saugatuck, and we must have got 6 inches last night. So, and I know you got some here, too. I'm not complaining. But I can tell you, if I didn't have to be here, I would not be. I love an excuse to stay home this time of year. So anyway, I'm delighted to be here, and thank you for having me. So today is kind of a switching gears. If you've been here in the past weeks, you've been exploring issues around death. So we're going to move into issues around some light and what that means for this time of year. And we can't, of course, have light without darkness. So that's what we'll be exploring. So I love writing and creative writing, and maybe some of you do too. And I take some workshops. And there was a workshop I took where the instructor encouraged us to think about if we were to write our life biography, what would the title be? And it had to be a two-word title, because writers, we tend to get really kind of big with our words. So coming back down to two words, that would be a title for your biography. Now, that'd be kind of fun to hear from you on. So I came up with my two words is chasing light. I'm probably not going to write the biography because it's really not as interesting as the title. But just this sense that everything I've done has been in pursuit of light. And of course, there's no single answer to the question, well, what is light? Because light can be experienced and explored in so many ways. As Beth said, a photographer is going to be interested in the aesthetics of light and how it affects our visual world. A physicist is going to be interested in those physical properties of light, the waves, the particles. Now, a doctor might be interested in how light affects our skin, what we absorb, and what the results are. And a shamanic healer might want to explore the darkness that has captured the light of someone's soul. So how we experience and answer what is light is as different as each of us here. Now, light is our primary tool for perceiving the world and communicating with it. So imagine if we were to set up a telescope, we would be capturing the waves of light that make up that universe, that vast universe of planets and galaxies. Light travels in waves. And if we were to set up a telescope and look through it at the smallest of particles, we would discover that light also travels in those atomic particles. So indeed, light provides this window to the universe, both cosmologically as well as on that atomic scale. Tiny and huge is what light invites us to. So I'm here today because I'm chasing light. And as we've noted, this is the season of darkness. The days are getting shorter and shorter. And of course, the only problem with really moving into the darkness is in this culture, we have filled this dark time with every possible party, gathering, food, celebration. Maybe we use that as a distraction from keeping us in the dark. All of these things that are happening, which are lovely and keep us having busy, busy nights. So I'm here to invite us into the wisdom of the dark season, this wisdom of winter. Now, in the shamanic understanding, as those of you who have heard me talk before know this, that there usually are three areas that the shamans are going to try to clear or focus on. So we're going to think about those today. One area of our knowing in the world is our heads, which is all the great stuff we get to learn and read and talk about in conceptual ways. Now, we, in this part of the world, we love our heads, don't we? We love all that stuff that we get to think about and learn. And sometimes we live there a little too much, so we have to balance it with our hearts. And our heart is where we get to discover what we feel. Not just think, but feel toward ourselves, toward this vast universe, this atomic universe. What do we feel? And then the third thing that has to be cleared is our actions. How do we take what we know, what we feel into the world to really be all we're called to be? So these three things have to be in balance. And the balance is what we need to open our heart to this dark night, to this dark season. So come chase the light with me. So first, our head. We're going to learn a little today about this season. And maybe you already know all of this, and if so, you can just kind of go, yeah, I know. Because you're smart people, I know that. So the Christmas, which is coming up, right? Yeah, it's coming up, December 25th. You know, that's a date that is set in the calendar. And it is actually in the Roman calendar, if we were to go way back in time, it was an important date in the Roman calendar because it celebrated Sol Invictus, the sun invincible, because it was the day of the winter solstice, that day when the sun returns, Sol Invictus. And so the Romans, who I think history shows us they did enjoy celebrating and imbibing on certain things. This was a beautiful time for them. And then another festival kind of came alongside Sol Invictus that was called Saturnalia, which was a festival of feasting and gift giving. So it was established and important in that ancient culture. So when Christianity came along, and they're looking for a day, this didn't happen until like the 4th century, they're looking for a day to celebrate the birth of their light giver, Jesus. And so, of course, why wouldn't you pair it with a holiday that already exists that's all about light and some gift giving and celebrating? So December 25th is what was settled on by the church. In fact, it was Pope Julius I in the 4th century that brought Christmas, the birth of Jesus, right alongside the winter solstice celebrations. So that's how we've arrived at this time of year. And we've, for me, coming back to the origins of the winter solstice is so helpful. It's the birth of light, the rebirth of light. So a little more history. In the early 17th century now, there was a wave of religious reform happening in Europe, and the Puritans were really pushing some of their thoughts. Oliver Cromwell was leading that, and in 1645, they vowed in England to get rid of the decadence that existed in the culture. So part of their plan was to cancel Christmas. So for a time there in Europe, Christmas was, at least by the Puritans, canceled. Now those Puritans, as you know, brought their ideas to this country. And from 1659 to 1681, the celebration of Christmas was outlawed in Boston. And any lawbreaker, if you were caught celebrating, you were fined 5 shillings. So we just didn't want any of that. Those Puritans, they're so funny. Just funny. So then there was just that kind of idea that, you know, we shouldn't maybe celebrate too much. And after the American Revolution, a lot of those English customs of the holiday fell out of favor, including Christmas. And in fact, in the United States, Christmas wasn't declared a federal holiday until 1870. Now, that's kind of important to know, right? It wasn't always forever. It's really fairly recent, and we all know what capitalism has done to shape that day. It's changed how we celebrate it and what it is. And I don't have any judgments about that because I do love a good eggnog. But it's important to remember the history. So the birth of Jesus was then set at this time when much of the humanity was celebrating the winter solstice, this return of the light. And of course it made sense, because for those who follow Jesus, and I have studied Jesus, he was born to be the light of the world. And Jesus had some things to say about light. No matter what you believe, he had some important teachings about it. And in fact, he said, "You are the light of the world. You are the light. So don't hide your light." Jesus didn't ask much of us, but maybe that. You are the light. So that's all this kind of learning stuff up here in our head. So fascinating and interesting, isn't it? We love that stuff. So, but now we got to move it to our heart. To what can light do here? How can light expand? How do we tend that light in our heart during this dark season? And if there's one thing I've discovered in chasing light, it's that in order to be light, first we have to tend our own light. And that is such hard work, because we get, in this culture, we either like to think about a lot of things or we just like to do a lot of things. We don't sit here in this center with our light and what it might need. In the center of our chest, the shamans teach, is this door that begins to glow when that hatch of feeling is released. And this opening creates this healing heart path. It's an ancient access that runs through the heart, both in this level of life as well as all things above and beneath, this axis right through the center of our hearts. And in this quiet heart is where creating loving awareness pulses like a bright star. And you know this from moments where your own creativity or your own centeredness is just pulsing. You just feel it. You know it. It is such a gift. But there's so many things that dampen it down. But on this axis, we can travel with light. And light is traveling in waves of joy and particles of love. The big things and the little things all intersect here in our light heart. My teacher, who invites us all into this heart center, talks about the word lumen, L-U-M-E-N, lumen. Lumen is this, it's technically defined as like a cavity or a space, is lumen. So if you think about your blood vessels and your blood running through your body, that empty space that it's running through, that cavity, that's lumen. You with me? Lumen is actually emptiness. It's a hollow space that we access in the quiet dark. And this empty, hollow space is where everything is possible. So we take our own small light into the lumen of us. and into the dark crevices of our soul. I like to think of this like a flashlight. So if you imagine having a flashlight in your heart, looking around, you can really only see one thing at a time with a flashlight, right? I mean, we're so used to like big fluorescent lights that light everything up. But a flashlight, it's like, ooh, what's that? Ooh, what's that? And when we take that flashlight into our soul, it's like one thing at a time gets our attention. What needs our attention? We search for that which is off balance or is stressing us out. Or we search with our light for why we're so stuck in patterns that we don't want. And when we can shine the light on it, things can change. It gets our attention, our focus. And if there's some dark crevice and corner in your soul that you're really not wanting to look at, find some courage. Take that light, check it out. Because chances are that little crevice that you're afraid of holds a key to your own heart expanding. Use your tools of curiosity to explore that lumen. So there are tools that we can each take to help us do that besides our flashlight. We can be bathed or exposed in steady light or do some daily practices that allow us to be sure the light is coming into our heart. So I know some of you have those kinds of practices. Maybe you light a candle. Maybe you sing a song. Maybe you stand out in nature. All of those things are tools that help us to be in our heart. Whatever puts us in exposure to the light. I was in a gathering once where a shaman was asked, what is the one most important practice that you do, that you find most helpful? And if you know shamans, they have a lot of practices, a lot of things they do. So this shaman thought for a while, and he said that every day when he rises, he faces east, and he swallows the sun. That was his most important practice. And you get the image, right? Every day you're centering, and then you're taking in to your space, the light that is there. What a lovely, lovely thing. Swallow the sun. So this leads us to the third area, to our actions. So my teacher who shares about the lumen says we need to be lumen in the world. And if our lumen space is explored, we then emit luminosity. Isn't that lovely? If I can explore my little dark, hollow space, then I become luminosity to the world. I begin to reflect the glowing light. I begin to take my light where it's needed. And I know you know there are so many ways to do that. We do it through generosity, through activism, through openness, through diversity. We take that light and bring it into this world that so needs us to be shining as clear as we can. So there are a couple examples, too, from the indigenous spiritual community about tending communal light. Because you've done all this inner work, right? And now you're going to take it out. And it isn't necessarily something you have to do on your own. It can be shared communally. So examples of this would be if one of my spiritual communities is gathering for a teaching or for an important ceremony for someone, a fire is literally lit. And that fire burns throughout the time that you're gathered. So if it's a three-day gathering, the fire is tended and burned for 3 days. And there are those who are assigned to be fire tenders. So the community benefits and is reflected in this light
that is tended carefully. You just wouldn't have a ceremony without a ceremonial fire. The light is that important. Another example would be a sweat lodge. If any of you have ever done that, you go into a covered kind of enclosure, and there is, from that enclosure, a small, they call it an umbilical cord. It's made out of herbs that goes to the fire. And there is the fire that is tended all throughout the sweat lodge. And the fire tender has to be praying over the stones that are going to come into the sweat lodge. The fire tender has to be sure it's the right kind of fire. The fire tender has to know which stones are coming in next. It's a huge job to be a fire tender. And all of us in the sweat lodge benefit from someone tending the fire. We don't just get this experience without this knowing of the fire that's being given to us. Now, that's very metaphorical, but I think you're getting the idea that it's not a solitary thing, that we're in this together, and that sometimes you get to participate in something, and sometimes you have to tend the fire. You just do. You've got to be the one who steps outside whatever's going on, and you're tending the fire so others can grow. So what issues might need you to tend a fire? You know, maybe there's someone in your family or in your circle right now who needs something extra. You might build a fire for them. It could be a literal fire, or it could be a metaphorical fire, where every day you're tending to their struggle, their grief, whatever it might be. You are doing that. And if you can do it with someone else, even better. If you share a household with someone or have another friend who's worried about that friend, together share that fire. There is also opportunities to imagine tending a fire for kindness. What would it be like if every day you and some other people intentionally lit a candle to put kindness into the world? Every day. Because does the world need that? Uh-huh. It does, right? This other voice of tolerance and kindness. Or you might choose to tend a fire for unity, to be together in this desire for, instead of everything dividing us, what is it that unites us? This is holy, sacred work. And if we can step back a little from all the busyness and remember what it means to be light in the world, we can grab these practices that can really help all of us reach that tipping point where I think love will just expand. That's my hope as somebody who chases light all the time. So ponder what you might be able to bring, but only after you tend your own heart fire in the very best ways, with the very best tools. So today, in our first time chatting in there, I asked people to think about some things about light. And I had them write it down on little cards. So I thought it would be kind of fun to try to light this communal fire, your communal fire, of what we're working on for light. So it's a little like a poem, and I haven't read it yet, so I'm hoping people wrote very legibly. But just for a moment, let's just think about that communal light. Some things about the winter or dark, that our gift is staying cozy at home under a blanket. In the depths of winter, I can be close to home. When I think of light, I think of awakening and beginning again. When I sit in the dark and think of light, I think of spring. I feel the many ways of light, including how light helps me be able to read. And of course, there are dark times. My advice to you, if you're going through a dark time, remember that when we numb the dark, we numb the light. If you are going through a dark time, that's part of being human. I won't presume to understand your situation, nor do I even have advice I can offer, but I give you my presence and my listening ear. As you go through a dark time, I will hold the light for you. And there are ways for you to be light in this world. Think about giving gifts. Be light by committing yourself to being your highest self. Words from your own community fire for this time. So, my friends, chase the light with me.